Today's program has been brought to you by S. Wallace Edwards & Sons, third-generation cure masters producing the country's best dry-cured and aged hams, bacon, and sausage. For more information, visit SurreyFarms.com. You're listening to Heritage Radio Network, broadcasting live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. If you like this program, visit HeritageRadioNetwork.org for thousands more.
This is Straight from the Source, streaming to you from the Heritage Radio Network studio in beautiful Bushwick, Brooklyn, New York. My name's Clay Gordon. In the 20 years or so that I've been exploring my chocolate life, I've visited cacao farms from Bolivia to Belize and beyond, spent time with farmers, cacao merchants, and some of the world's best chocolate makers and confectioners. Straight from the Source is inspired by the people I've met and what they've taught me. My guest today is Mark Boatwright. Mark is the founder of Choctaw. Which specialized, I believe, was the first company in the United States, or perhaps even the world, to be producing single-origin chocolate ice cream. Is that correct, Mark?
That is correct. And vanilla ice cream also.
And I was about to say vanilla ice cream as well. And you're also involved in something called the Oxygen Farming Foundation, and we'll get to that in just a moment. Mark and I met back in 2005 in the jungles of Ecuador, where you were doing your first research on Choctaw. What took you to Ecuador what was the genesis behind the whole Choctaw idea?
Well, the genesis between the Choctaw idea was my former life of being an anthropology major and being completely enamored with the Mayan and Aztec cultures and their use of cacao, and so I wanted to do something that was different than anybody else was doing in the industry at the time, so I came up with the Choctaw ice cream idea of going out into the marketplace with single-origin chocolate and vanilla ice creams, which we did in early 2007.
And when people think about ice cream, they think about cold, obviously, and normally things that are cold don't deliver good differentiations in flavor. I mean, was it surprising to you that when you put together an ice cream and then you had maybe cocoa from Costa Rica as opposed to cocoa from someplace else, that the flavors came through just wildly differently?
I don't think I was as surprised as you were when you first came over to my house that day, because we talked quite a bit about the cold factor when we were sitting in the extremely warm, humid jungles of Ecuador. And as you know, because I came out of the wine industry, cold does without a doubt affect the taste profiles, specifically in wine. But as it turned out, the different properties and taste aspects of cocoa and vanilla come through dramatically in the cold form of ice cream. But you're certainly not going to get it when it's rock solid, mm-hmm. just out of the freezer. It needs to temper just a little bit, as any good ice cream aficionado realizes.
Well, one of the things I think that people don't really realize about vanilla is that it's also a new world thing. I mean, when people think of vanilla, they think of Madagascar bourbon vanilla, but in fact, vanilla originated in actually not too far from where cocoa originated. They think somewhere in southern Mexico to northern Ecuador as well.
Right. Vanilla, actually, as I understand it, first came from the Veracruz region of Mexico and spread south through Costa Rica, but it didn't make it through the isthmus of Panama. And cacao, I'm not sure, and you could probably enlighten everyone of where the real origins of cacao came from, but I don't think it was really in central Mexico. I think it was originally from the lower and upper Amazon basins, and somehow through, I presume, trade thousands and thousands of years ago, it became a very much of a staple for the upper echelons of the Olmec, which is the original culture in Mexico, and then the Mayans and the Aztecs after that.
Yeah, so there's this very long history of cacao and vanilla being combined at origin, which is really quite fascinating. And when you started Choctaw, were you always thinking about going into the root of vanilla, or how did you discover vanilla as a way to go, or as a way to extend the Choctaw, the chocolate, single origin chocolate line?
Well, for my own personal taste, I'm a vanilla freak. And as you pointed out earlier, most people think vanilla comes from Madagascar, because Madagascar is the largest producer of vanilla at this point in time. But through a stroke of meeting people like yourself, I met a lady up in the Bay Area by the name of Patricia Rain. She goes by the Vanilla Queen, and she and I had some major discussions about vanilla and its origins and the different taste profiles. And she suggested that I get a hold of a gentleman by the name of David Gardella down in Costa Rica, and I did, because I had to go down there to deal with some cacao sources for the first line of ice creams. And David's the one that got me really to understand what's going on with vanilla in the world. And then I decided to start experimenting. So I got vanilla from Papua New Guinea, vanilla from Mexico, obviously vanilla from Madagascar, and a few other sources, started playing around with it, and I'll be damned if they didn't all taste different, too. And it's just like wine and cacao. I mean, depending on where it's being grown, the soil conditions, how it's treated after it's been grown, how it's cured, how it's extracted, all makes a difference in its flavor profiles. And lo and behold, we came out with four different vanilla ice creams along with the four different chocolates.
And then my favorite, which is the mix of Costa Rican vanilla and Costa Rican chocolate, which was
right
phenomenal.
That, well, we can thank David for that, because he's the only guy in Costa Rica that I'm aware of that's extracting vanilla, and he and I have become very good friends and cohorts and a project that we'll probably talk about a little bit later.
Yeah, we're going to get to that after the break. But let's start it now. I mean, it's a really, really interesting segue from where we're talking about to the the project down in Costa Rica. But let's think about it. I mean, cocoa and vanilla, or chocolate and vanilla, have had this long-standing association, and many people believe that you actually can't make chocolate without vanilla, that it's sort of like salt. It brings out something in chocolate that's necessary. But one of the things that certainly David Gardella has been pioneering, and you've been working with him, is a different kind of association between cacao and vanilla, which is to use cacao trees as the tutors on which to grow vanilla vines.
That's true. Mm-hmm. And that all started on my very first meeting with David. We met in an evening time. The next morning, he picked me up bright and early in San Jose, and we drove out to his farm. And I had my cameras in tow, and I started taking photographs of all the different plants and the vanilla vines and the cacao trees that he had there. And I really didn't know anything about vanilla at that point in time, other than a couple of books I read. And David started explaining to me how he would plant specific trees, and those trees would be used as the tutor, because vanilla is a vine, so it has to have something to crawl up on.
Right. It's actually a member of the orchid family. It doesn't actually root in soil, right?
That's correct.
Okay.
There's an orchid, so, and it's a pretty flower, too. But as fate would have it, as David and I were roaming around his farm, one of his vanilla vines had decided to migrate from its tutor tree and wrapped itself around a cacao tree with two beautiful green pods on it. Now, David was standing next to that tree at the same time as I was taking the photograph, but neither one of us actually got the significance of what was going on there until I got back to the United States and processed my film, because I still like to shoot film. And I looked at this photograph of the vanilla vine wrapped around a cacao tree, and I started thinking about all the education that I got from David Gardella. So I immediately said, wow, I wonder why no one's ever used the cacao tree as a tutor. So I scanned the photograph, sent it down to David, and within 5 minutes, David called me back and said, Boatwright, why aren't we using a cacao tree as a tutor? And I said, you tell me, you're the vanilla doctor. Right. And he started thinking about it, started doing some research, started planting his vanillas at the bottom of cacao trees, and found out that the symbiotic relationship between the two plants was more amazing than he had ever thought about. So he started getting higher yields of his vanilla vines on the cacao trees. I suggested that we try to get a project going. David's a former diplomat with the U.S. government, specifically in the Agency of International Development. Mm-hmm. He got a hold of some of his buddies, suggested that we do a vanilla cacao project in Haiti. He went down to Haiti before the earthquake, did a study, found out that it was a feasible thing to do. Then the earthquake happened. AID backed off of it, but then a year and a half later, they called up David and said, we have the money, let's go ahead and do the project in Haiti. So David went down there. He got, I believe, 695 farmers as part of the first project. I believe the first planting happened a little over 2.5 years ago, and it's been wildly successful down there to the point where AID now, as I understand it through David, has suggested that we get another 800 or 900 farmers together and plant more cacao and more vanilla in the northern part of Haiti around Cape Haitian. So how
do we define wildly successful?
Well, according to David, because I have not been down there, hopefully I'll get to go next time, he said that they've had more flowering on the vanilla vines in Haiti than he's ever heard of before. So he finds it wildly successful that that's happening.
Just from the perspective of vanilla. I mean that,
you know,
okay, and so more flowers means more potential pods, which means more vanilla beans.
Which means more money.
Which means more income for the
farmers.
That's correct.
Right, because part of this whole idea from my point of view was to give the poor farmers of the world who are growing cacao and or vanilla two cash crops that the Western world and more people in the East part of the Orient also find as two of the favorite flavors, which happen to be vanilla and chocolate. So it's more of a benefit, I hope, for the farmers of the world and for obviously the foodies of the world, that they'll get a very high quality cacao, very high quality vanilla, from a source that's only 90 miles away from the coast of America.
Right. Well, do you know much about the market for vanilla? You know, because for example, you know, in cocoa, you know, much of the market is dominated by very large players, and something like, you know, 90% of the world's crop is purchased by, you know, 10 companies or less. But is the vanilla market, you know, a much smaller group of players or a much larger group of players? And so we don't see the same sort of density of ownership of the market.
You know, I have to be honest. Okay. I honestly do not know the answer to that particular question. I do know that when I go to a fancy food show, for instance, which happened up in San Francisco 2.5 weeks ago, we spoke with all the vanilla producers or all the extract producers, and there is right at this moment a little bit of a shortage of vanilla in the world, and too many of the larger corporations are turning to what I consider would be fake vanilla, vanillin.
Uh-huh.
Vanillin is a product that is extracted from wood pulp waste, 90% of it, and then the other 10%, which is supposed to be used strictly for cosmetic purposes, i.e. soaps, fragrances, and stuff like that, comes from, believe it or not, cow manure. A Japanese scientist figured out how to extract vanillin from cow manure about 20 years ago, and the perfume industry and stuff uses that instead of real vanilla.
I'll have to think twice before getting a vanilla-scented body anything from now on. I hadn't thought about that,
I mean, when David first sent me that article, I felt exactly the same way you did. But it's obviously been well will cost.
That's certainly very true, but it just sort of gives people the willies, I think, to understand or to think about.
And that's one of the reasons I mentioned it. Yeah. People should have the willies when they think about anything that has vanillin in it.
Because you don't know where it came from.
Yeah, you don't know where it came from, right? It's either wood pulp waste or.
I want to sort of end this segment before we take the break and jump into the next part of it by saying, you know, okay. One of the great things about the reason why I ask you the question about the market is that the world market for cocoa right now is about $2,300 a ton. And in most places where the farmer does not sell directly to the market, which is almost every place in the world, the farmer is usually making about 70% of the world's market, if they're lucky. So if the market is currently $2,200 a ton, $2,300 a ton, the farmer might be making $1,400 or $1,500 a ton for their cocoa beans, which means that it is one crop among a number of subsistence crops that they're doing. Yep. They're doing cocoa, a little rice, and maybe a fruit or something like that. And so what's interesting about vanilla for me is that the world market price for vanilla right now to the supplier, is about $50 a kilo for finished beans, which
Correct.
Means fermented and dried, which means that, you know, the theoretical value of a metric ton, which is coincidentally about how much cocoa you can get off of a hectare, you can apparently get about a metric ton of vanilla from a hectare, is around $50,000 as opposed to $2,300 or $2,400 a ton. Now, the farmer's not going to make all that $50,000 a ton because they're selling green beans, which then have to be cured and then have to go through the export and things like that. But that's just a really significant difference in value for something that can be grown on something that's already growing. I mean, it's really quite remarkable.
That was my whole point with the idea originally was we needed to get these guys more money. I mean, you know what it takes to get that cacao pod off the tree, cut in half, fermented, dried, etc. And, you know, vanilla, frankly, is a very labor-intensive proposition. Every vanilla bean you see came from one specific flower off of that vanilla vine. Mm-hmm. And that flower, except in central Mexico, which has a special kind of bee that pollinates it, is hand-pollinated. Every bean that everybody uses in the world has been hand-pollinated by a person going in with a small little toothpick type of a thing and rubbing the two little, can't remember the names of them, inside the flower that pollinates it, that produces the vanilla bean. So the farmer, it's very, very labor intensive. Even at $50 a kilo, my understanding is the farmers are not making a whole lot of money.
Right.
But then third world farmers tend not to make a lot of money. I think they're taken advantage of by these large corporations. And it's something that I know that David and I would both like to stop. We want to turn these guys into their own businesses and their own capitalists, and so they deserve to make the money and be able to send their kids to college one day.
I think that's a great place to start a segue. Mark, we'll be back after the break, and we'll talk about something called oxygen farming. And you're listening to Straight from the Source on Heritage Radio Network.
You're listening to Cryin' Blues by the California Honey Drops on heritageradionetwork.org. Today's program has been brought to you by S. Wallace Edwards & Sons. Edwards Suriano hams are aged to perfection for no less than 400 days and hickory smoked to achieve a deep mahogany color. The Edwards name is well known for its world-class aged and cured meats. Their exclusive curing and aging recipe produces a unique flavor profile that enhances the quality characteristics of Berkshire pork. Optimum amounts of pure white fat marbling contribute to a flavor that's a delicate, perfect balance between sweet and salty. For more information, visit www.surreyfarms.com.
And welcome back to Straight from the Source. Mark, I mean, you know, I'm reading a little bit of information here on the Oxygen Farming website. And the thing that looks, you know, the thing that's, you know, quite remarkable to me is, you know, we've sort of come to chocolate and vanilla as ingredients that go with each other. They didn't grow really anywhere near each other. The origins aren't really near each other. But it turns out that they grow in almost identical conditions. And, you know, not all that different from coffee as well. So somehow it sort of seems like they were made for each other in a sort of larger karmic, cosmic kind of sense in a weird kind of way, don't you think?
Yes, I do, actually. The whole thing has been rather cosmic, the way this whole thing has come together, frankly. Right. Including our meeting, for God's sake. We've known each other almost 8 years. We've been friends.
Yeah, it's been fun. And that trip to Ecuador, you know, taught me a number of things. Number one is that we were down in Naranjal outside the co-op, and that's where we saw that they had cut down cocoa trees in order to be able to grow passion fruit, because somebody had convinced the farmers that passion fruit was hot on the market right now, and if they cut down their cocoa trees and strung wires between their cocoa trees, they'd be able to grow the passion fruit. So they lost one crop while they were waiting for another crop to grow. And then by the time they had produced enough passion fruit in order to be able to go to market, everybody was overproducing, and so the price dropped off, you know, bottomed out of the market. And so they were actually worse off in the long run for having gone from cocoa to passion fruit. And this, you know, this vanilla thing sounds sort of, you know, suspiciously like magic almost. It's like you take the tree, you put the vanilla vine, you hang it off the tree somehow because you don't plant it. And it grows in a couple of years. You know, it is hard work because you do need to hand pollinate these things. But you've got the vanilla and you can collect it. You know, do you know if you harvest vanilla at the same time you harvest cocoa in most places in the world, or is it a different time of year?
I believe it's a different time of year.
So
now cocoa isn't harvested at exactly the same time every year, is it?
Well, not around the world. No,
right, but
they're in the middle of harvest right now. I was talking to somebody from the Dominican Republic. They're in harvest right now. When I was in Peru last week, they're in the middle of harvest right now. And I know in many places in South America, but I don't know if that's the case in either Indonesia or in Africa, if they're in there.
Nor do I. What I do know is I believe that the flowering of vanilla starts around beginning of April and goes for about another month and a half after that, April, May, maybe into June. So they've got a very small window to run around to the vanilla vines and pollinate it. Now, I'm not the expert. I'm a layman when it comes to the knowledge that you have on cacao, and I'm definitely a layman on the knowledge that David has on vanilla. But it's a very interesting crop. It's a fun, as you're well aware, it's nice to be out in the jungle. that's where this stuff grows, and that's one of the problems that's going on, as I think you're well aware, and I'm sure a lot of your listeners are, is that we are decimating the jungles and the rainforests of the world, and cutting them down for either lumber or specifically for pasture land to produce more cattle. Mm-hmm. Which then produce more cow manure, which produces more methane, which goes in the atmosphere and helps with climate change and the global warming that's going on out there.
Right. Well, I'm looking at oxygenfarming.com, and one of the things they talk about is they're talking about it in one of the articles about establishing a vanilla and cocoa industry in Haiti, is that only 2% of the original forest cover in Haiti is still standing on average?
That's right.
I mean,
you think about it. I mean, the farmers down there, the people, they need, unfortunately, they need a way to be able to cook. their food. So they've cut down the forest for charcoal, and nobody is replanting it. But nobody's replanting a lot of the forest that's been decimated in the Amazon basin, or probably in Peru or Ecuador for that.
Well, that's certainly very, but it's certainly very true. But the number of 98% of the trees have been cut down in this country is just a startling fact. I mean, elsewhere on the site, David talks about, you know, trillions of trees being cut down in the last 50 years and only a very small percentage of them being replanted.
Correct. Right. Which, of course, you know, and let's be as frank as possible, the equatorial zone of our planet produces, as I understand it, approximately 40% of all the oxygen that goes on the planet. And we're cutting the rainforest down, and I can't remember the rate, but it's an alarming rate, and we're not reproducing the trees. So not only is oxygen not being produced, but more importantly, or maybe not more importantly, but it's that symbiotic relationship, we're no longer filtering the carbon out of the air, because it's the trees and the plants of the world that filter the carbon out of the atmosphere and replenish the atmosphere with oxygen.
So part of the basis of the project, or part of the moving forward of the project, is by planting vanilla in combination with cocoa in places like Haiti. You provide an economic incentive for the farmers to not cut down trees that are currently standing, but also to replant trees and to reforest.
Yes, because the not only do vanilla vines and cacao need an upper canopy shade to go in, but there's, you know, numerous other life forms need that canopy too. And I think you can tell me if I'm wrong here, but I mean, coffee needs a little bit of shade too, for God's sake. And so to continually cut down the forests of the world is just insanity. Excuse me.
Right. No,
from our point of view,
it certainly makes sense. certainly. Cocoa, in its natural form, is definitely an understory tree, and we talk about shade-grown cocoa and shade-grown coffee as things that are very desirable, in part because it produces healthier cocoa plants. They're less stressed, certainly, the same thing is true of coffee, but there's also a sense in which shade-grown means that it's grown in a more natural environment, something which is not as intensively farmed as intensively harvested as well.
That's true.
But the notion
of... Both of these plants also produce a fair amount of oxygen. I happen to live in Pasadena, California, and I live about a mile and a half away from Huntington Gardens, which is a, you know, beautiful place. They have a huge greenhouse in there, and I was there about a year ago, and I was walking to the greenhouse, and they happen to have a cacao plant there that's got some very small pods on it. But next to that tree, they've got a placard that says how much oxygen that particular tree produces on a daily basis. It's enough for two people every day. And when you look across the aisle, they also have a vanilla vine. It also has the same little plaque on it that produces an amazing amount of oxygen. And that's how this whole project started, you know, coming forth from David, which was, you know, we need a way to not only scrub the atmosphere of the carbon that we in humanity and the natural process produces, but we need a way to, you know, produce more oxygen. And if we're killing the rainforest of the world, how do we do that? Mm-hmm. Well, originally through vanilla and cacao. They need those forests. We want those farmers to make money, and
we love chocolate.
Get a project going.
Right. Yep. We love chocolate and we love vanilla, and you know, it sounds like a very virtuous cycle all the way around. So there's a big event coming up on the 1st of April?
So, again, David Gardella, you're my chocolate guru. David's my vanilla and chocolate and also scientist guru. And David's come up with a great plan to plant more trees and also incorporate the children of the world to do it. So the very first Next Generation Week is happening April 1st down in Costa Rica, where we have a group of local children. We're going to be planting trees in Puerto Viejo, Sarapiquí, about 4 kilometers away from David's farm. We've got 10 hectares, and the kids of that region are going to be out there planting trees, and we hope to spread this to virtually every country in the world and get children to participate in planting trees. And for doing that, the children hopefully will get a scholarship fund, so when the kids get old enough to go to college, money will be there to send them to college, as long as they've planted their trees, made sure the tree hasn't been chopped down, mm-hmm. so it continues to produce oxygen, and more importantly at this moment in time, scrub the atmosphere of carbon. Because I don't, you know, we can put as much carbon as we want in the air. We can try to tax the governments or the businesses of the world, but nobody's come up with any solutions of actually how to get the carbon out of the air until I think Gardella came up with this idea of oxygen farming.
And again, you may not be fully conversant, but also the notion of creating an oxygen farming market, sort of like the carbon credits market.
Well, that's part of what David, I think, envisions. Again, I'm not going to speak for anybody. I envision that this is a way to not decimate the economies of the world by higher taxes because of whatever carbon the companies of the world might be producing. This is a way to get money into the hands of the farmers of the world to plant trees and scrub the atmosphere in the only way that I understand it as a common sense kind of guy, is trees suck carbon out of the atmosphere and replace it with oxygen.
Right. And
it's that simple.
It's that simple from a mechanical perspective, but we need to be able to create the economic environment, the incentive to the farmer, what's going to be the return to them to not do this, because if they're not cutting down their tree, they need to go buy something to burn in order to make, in order to be able to cook in the world. So it's a very, very complex interrelated thing. It's easy to say plant trees, but how do you, looking at Haiti, it's easy to say it, difficult to do with 98% of the trees down. How do you create the market? How do you create the incentive and the environment in which the farmers realize, oh yeah, there's benefit for me in order to be able to leave those trees up there? Mark, I mean, a lot of really, really fascinating concepts. Food for thought, no pun intended, food for thought, very, very much so. Chocolate and vanilla, you love them as flavors. They could be keys to help saving the rainforest and to have a positive impact on climate change going forward. Thank you again, Mark, for being my guest this afternoon. Thank to Jack Inslee for engineering today's program. Thanks for everybody here at the Heritage Radio Network and at Heritage Foods for growing the network, giving me an opportunity to talk to everyone. If you're not a member, please consider joining me and becoming a member and supporting all the hard work of the folks who do things here. I'll be back next week with more Straight from the Source. And thanks for listening.
Thanks, Blake.
Thanks for listening to this program on heritageradionetwork.org. You can find all of our archived programs on our website or as podcasts in the iTunes store by searching Heritage Radio Network. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can email us questions at any time at info@heritageradionetwork.org. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization. To donate and become a member, visit our website today. Thanks for listening.